Welcome to Camino Talks. Today's guest is the wonderful Blanca Valencia. Blanca is a cook from Bilbao, but she has lived all over Spain, and she is a specialist in Spanish gastronomy. She's also the host of the Spice Bags podcast, which is a podcast about international food in Ireland. So thank you so much for joining us, Blanca, and welcome to Camino Talks.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, Caitlin. I'm very excited. I'm a big lover of El Camino de Santiago.
Fantastic. And that's exactly what we're here to talk about today. We're going to have a chat about the food regions of the Camino Frances, just focusing on the Camino Frances first, because there is such incredible food diversity across Spain that it's impossible to say this is the food of Spain. So we've decided to focus this one just on the Camino Frances. So Blanca, can you just tell us a little bit about the regions that the Camino Frances passes through?
So there's four regions. So it's like Navarra, La Rioja, and then Castilla, and then Galicia. And Castilla, it's essentially, we're talking about Castilla León, because there's also Castilla-La Mancha. So those four regions. And you can tell when you travel through those regions how each region kind of borrow from the region next to them. So, you know, if you look at La Rioja, they borrow a little bit from the Basque Country. So yeah, those four regions, and they're very interesting and very, very different. And obviously, you know, Navarra and Galicia have different languages even.
Absolutely. So let's start from the beginning. What can people expect when they start the Camino Frances around about Saint-Jean-Pied-de-Port? What sort of foods are they going to be seeing, and foods and drinks at the beginning of the Camino Frances?
So Navarra is a very important kingdom in Spanish history. And it's a wonderful place because even though it's landlocked, there's a lot of food that relates to vegetables. And one very iconic product, piquillo peppers, comes from there. And Spanish people love piquillo peppers, but essentially this is Navarra. So Navarra is what we would say an orchard. It's an orchard of very, very high-end products in Spain, of high-end vegetables especially. But piquillo peppers that you've seen everywhere, they're from Navarra. And then the white asparagus are also from Navarra. Also, Navarra has a very famous denomination of origin that is called Navarra. Navarra has one of the oldest cheese denominations, and the cheese is called Roncal. So Navarra is a place that's very, you know, it's the Pyrenees, it's very mountainous, they speak Basque. So it's very, very different to a place like Galicia or a place like Castilla. And Navarra, obviously, because it was a kingdom, they have these separate traditions, and it was a very powerful kingdom. So other things that you would find would be all the things that are related to hare, rabbits, very, very traditional and very famous in the past for what we call caza or game. Mm-hmm. But it's a region that is kind of rustic. To me, it would be the more rustic region because of the influence of the Pyrenees. So, you know, the cheeses would be more sheep's milk. Whereas if you move into other regions like Galicia, you find there's no sheep's milk anymore. They have a very interesting dish that I've had before, which is partridges in chocolate, which almost, it sounds like a mole, but this is a recipe that you will find in other parts of Spain. They also have, because there's so many sheep herders, migas. So migas you can also find in other regions of Spain, but especially in areas that you have sheep herders. And the sheep herders that would make a cheese like Roncal, which is a little bit smoked, would eat the migas. They would just carry all the bread and make it then and there. So Navarra, especially known for the orchard and for this first historic cheese, Roncal, which I think they got they were the pioneers in getting their denomination of origin, I think 1981, which is very early. So, you know, great region, very mountainous. And then you would move into La Rioja, and I know La Rioja very well because I lived in Vitoria, in the capital of the Basque Country. So La Rioja is, at the moment, the place that has the most Michelin star restaurants per capita in Spain. So definitely it's the type of place where you can go and treat yourself to an amazing Michelin experience. And I would say the prices are much more reasonable that you would find in big cities. But Aro, the capital the wine capital of La Rioja, Logroño is the capital. Aro is a really, really fantastic place to visit for wine and for food. And there's one dish that a lot of people, when they hear about it, they're like, chorizo with potatoes? And it's a stew with peppers. But when it's done well, and a lot of the restaurants in Aro do the chorizos con patatas perfectly, it's sublime. And as you know, when you see chorizo, you see that it says chorizo riojano, and it's because it's from La Rioja. So very famous for their chorizo, very famous for their wines, and because the region is divided between the Basque Country and what is called La Rioja, then you have different influences. You have, you know, towards La Rioja, Alavesa, you have more Basque influence. And then in La Rioja, you would have more of like a Castilian or different influence. But definitely dishes to look out for also in La Rioja. I think all the egg dishes are fascinating, and Spanish people are obsessed with eggs. So you see a lot of revueltos, which are scrambled eggs with different things. My favorite would be with white asparagus from Navarra. But La Rioja, lots of fun. Logroño, also the capital, you know, much bigger, is famous for tapeo. So you go to all these different places and you get different nibbles. But for more restaurant-y things, Aro, for the asador, you know, where you eat like baby lamb and things like that, Aro would be much more, to me, you know, they have tapas, but the restaurants are definitely a place to go. And then outside, you know, it is linked to the Camino. I think Ezcaray, the Echaurren, is possibly the most famous restaurant in La Rioja. And I'd highly recommend that restaurant because it has many different levels of restaurants. You have the basic menu del día, and then you have your Michelin, and they also have a hotel. So if you have some extra cash. But that whole area of Ezcaray is stunning in La Rioja. And what other things about La Rioja? So the pocha. So this is something that also happens in the north of Spain, and you wouldn't see it anywhere else, is the pickled chilies, pickled like peppers, guindillas. People have them with beans. So it kind of cuts the fat. You know, sometimes in Spain you have these stews and they're very fatty, and you know, you get a lot of energy, of course, from them. But in this area, you can get the chili peppers, and that just cuts through the fat. So definitely eat it with that. Don't avoid it. And then also they serve migas, and they sell migas with their grapes. So they have these breadcrumbs, and they have chorizo, and then on the side they would have garnacha grape. So also around the area of Ovaro, and then, you know, around the Monasterio de Santo Domingo, also lots of places that you can find. Like it's I would say La Rioja to me would be, from a foodie place, my number one destination in the Camino Frances. I would definitely be spending more time there. Then we move into Burgos and all that area, you know, Palencia, and all that area is Castilla León. And once again, Castilla León, historically also a separate kingdom, very important, but in a way it's lost like a lot of dynamism compared to other regions. But I think astronomically there's so much history there, and there's so much history in architecture, and it's a beautiful area. And my family is originally from Sagún, which is a very important point. So I would know that area from my family and the types of things that they cook and the little, you know, cookies that you can get in bakeries there. But Burgos especially is known for two things. This is from a Spanish point of view: for morcilla, so the rice black pudding, and it's very well known for queso de Burgos. And queso de Burgos is a fresh cheese, and it's diametrically the opposite of Roncal, but it's a very fresh cheese that people outside of Spain don't associate fresh cheese with Spain. But this is the cheese that all Spanish people eat for breakfast or as dessert. So definitely try and get some, and especially try and get the artisan ones. I would say the industrial ones are okay, but I love them with a little bit of honey or quince. But that would be something that Burgos is very, very well known for. Also, they're known for their stews in Burgos and Castilla. You have this, you know, Burgos, Palencia, León, you have all these similar stews made with chickpeas, but in Burgos, they make them with white beans. So these are similar to cocido that we have all over Spain. But definitely in Burgos, I would go also, you know, to take advantage of all the tapeo around the city. Probably I wouldn't spend so much on restaurants there. I would maybe, once we get to maybe Galicia, so La Rio, I would divide that, if you have the budget, I would divide it more between Galicia and La Rioja. So Palencia, so as you go into Palencia also is a region of Spain that's kind of not as well known as other places, but they have also their own cuisine. And this is the cuisine of the sopa de ajo. I don't know if you've had that, Caitlin. The garlic soup.
Myself.
So the garlic soups all over, you know, Castilla y León, you would have so many varieties, but they would be soups that are made with very simple ingredients. And essentially they boil down to bread and garlic and water. But of course, as people have become richer, that would have been, you know, hundreds of years ago. But now sopa de ajo would have chorizo, it would have jamón, it would be made with chicken stock. But I can't even, like, that's the soup that you need to keep you going. You know, it's like, and it has a poached egg. So you poach an egg in the soup. But this would be the essential soup to get you, I think, through any hike or when you, you know, just, it's, it gives you protein, it gives you, you have paprika in it. So it has a lot of flavor coming from these, like the pulverized peppers that are used to make pimenton. And that soup, you will find it in different variations all throughout Spain, especially around Castilla León. And, you know, some people would add more like jamón, like la sopa burgalesa con jamón, or they would add chorizo, or they would keep it more like vegetarian. You can definitely have like a vegetarian version. Then, you know, in León, I mean, to me, Sahagún has some interesting things like leeks, which is kind of very French, but apparently that one of the reasons they would have that, it was probably because it was brought by somebody along the Camino. But the leeks from Sahagún are very, very delicious. They also make these delicious cookies called amarguillas, which are almond cookies, and then these galletas de hierro, which are made with a mold in Sahagún. So Sahagún to me is so interesting because also the most important, or the first anthropologist of the world, Bernardino de Sahagún, is from that town, and he codified all the foods that came from Mexico. You also have Alfonso VI, the king. So my dad is very proud of his like historic town and the foods, and he gets super excited when he goes there, like to eat the leeks and things like that. So so this whole area of Castilla León was the area really that they were the precursors to Spain, and they're the ones, the Castilla was the one who pushed like the unification of Spain, and they were very, very powerful. So when we get to Santiago, we'll talk about the Order of Santiago and the cross that you see in the cake. But so León, because you can see it's closer to Galicia, in León you can see some influences coming in from Galicia. So for example, you start seeing empanadas, which are associated with the Camino de Santiago, but you start seeing them before you get to Galicia. And it's because they have in places like El Bierzo, they would have their own empanada. So that's normal that it spills over. But there's in León, there's a very famous sweet called Mantecados de Astorga that you will see everywhere that is made by nuns. And one of the reasons you see so many in the Camino and everywhere in Spain, so many convent suites, it's because around, I think it was 1845, there was something called desamortización, where the church was taken, all their land and holdings were taken away, and they had to find a way to make money. So the nuns had to find a way to make money. And in some regions, you will see the use of egg yolk. And that's because they had to give away the wineries or people who made wines would keep the egg whites and they would give the egg yolks to the nuns. So you will find also around Palencia and places like that, you will find some yemas. They're like really just like a caramelized egg yolk. I don't, have you seen that? Like Spain is famous for all these egg yolk dishes, and they also very famous in Portugal, and you can see also the similar dishes in Brazil. For example, I was in a Brazilian bakery yesterday and they had egg yolk and coconut, like, and I was thinking, oh my goodness, this reminds me so much of the convent sweets. But definitely buy like all these convent sweets. I adore them because they're just so special. Even the little papers that the Mantecados de Astorga come in, they're made by hand. So it's just a real artisanal industry. And in cities like Madrid, you will find shops that just deal with convent sweets. So that would be, if you're like ever in Madrid, to give you a good idea of all the convent sweets that you have all over Spain. But definitely Mantecados de Astorga would be very famous. And then El Bierzo in León is very famous for peppers. And we've talked a little bit about all these peppers. You could almost do a map of peppers that you will encounter and in different combinations. So you have the pickled one. So we said piquillo would be a normal, you wouldn't really find that pepper fresh. It would always come in a bottle. And then guindilla, which also comes pickled in a bottle. And then as you go into Castilla León, you start finding them fresh. Like, so El Bierzo would be a very famous, and obviously Galicia has a lot of peppers. They're really going after certifying all their peppers, but in Galicia, they would tend to be fresh. You also will find along different places the dried peppers also. So you could almost do that little map where you see all the peppers and then you see dried peppers, fresh peppers. But León, definitely possibly the best peppers, fresh peppers would come from El Bierzo. And then when you go into Galicia, and I don't know about you, but I tend to spend more time in Galicia. I find Galicia is very similar to Ireland and it has these amazing food products. And it's just, once you cross over to Galicia, you can see Galicia is surrounded by mountains. So you can imagine hundreds of years ago, or even not hundreds of years ago, like after Franco, the access to Galicia was very difficult in a car. And some of the most expensive highways have been built in Galicia. And I don't think at this point they'll ever get a high-speed train. So, you know, like it'd be amazing. I could get a high-speed train from Madrid to Galicia, but that's not going to happen. So probably the best way to cross over is by foot, you know, so... but Galicia is, because I think it was separated for such a long time, they have, and the climate is different, they have, all of a sudden you're in this completely different food landscape. And it's, whereas, you know, Castilla León, it's all about cheeses that are made with sheep's milk, and you have Castellano, and, you know, it's just, you go into Galicia and that disappears because, you know, it's all about cows. So Galicia has, to Spanish people, we always associate Galicia with these cheeses. So, you know, cheeses like Arzúa, Ulloa, Tetilla, Cebreiro, which is associated with the Camino, so all, and San Simón. So none of these cheeses would be made with sheep's milk. So Tetilla is the one that is shaped like a woman's breast, and that's that the legend of that shape is linked to the Catedral de Santiago, to the portico, the glory, the portico of glory. So apparently, when they were building the portico, they built the Apostle Daniel with a perverted face looking at Queen Esther at her breast, because they gave her apparently enormous breast. And the ecclesiastical powers said, you need to reduce her breast. And as, you know, a protest, they started shaping it that way, which, you know, could be true or not. I guess the DO, the denomination of origin, always talk about that story, but it could just be that it was convenient. They were shaping it, you know, and that's the shape. But I love Tetilla. Tetilla is possibly one of the only cheeses, I would say, Tetilla and Artúa Ulloa, which are similar, that you would love, like that are really nice for melting. Because like when you think of other cheeses from Spain, they're not cheeses used in cooking that much, but the Gallego cheeses would be. So you will find dishes in Galicia that will have the melted cheese. And then you have the smoked San Simón, which is unusual because, you know, in Spain, we don't really love the smoked cheeses. A lot of people don't like them. And then Cebreiro has a beautiful shape, which is like a mushroom. Some people say it's a chef's hat, but also it's a cheese that was developed to feed pilgrims throughout throughout the ages. And it's a more fresh cheese. You can also find a more cured version of it. So apart from the cheeses, Galicia is very famous for peppers, and the most famous pepper is the padrón pepper. And you will find padrón pepper everywhere in the world. And in terms of peppers, that's the pepper that all the other regions envy Galicia for. And the padrón peppers were brought by Franciscan monks to Galicia, and they basically bred them in a way so they wouldn't be as hot, but they didn't take all the hotness out. They left, you know, on average 1 in 10. But it's very interesting when we were talking about Sahagún, how this Franciscan monk from Sahagún first went to Mexico. And then you can see almost all those Franciscan monks influencing the food of Spain. So there's a Franciscan monk who wrote a book that was a bestseller, Altamiras. So very, very interesting. But padrón pepper definitely would be an example of these Franciscan monks influenced by this man, Bernardino de Sahagún, into bringing these peppers. But Galicia has, I think, 4 peppers that are denomination of origin or indication, like geographical. And they're all cooked in the same way. They're like fried and then you eat them. And the funny thing is some of them are really big. So, you know, padrón is really small, but some of them are quite big. But if you do see them, just, you know, you eat them, but you can't just eat them in one bite. You have to kind of eat them in several bites. Galicia is also very famous for turnip tops, but they have 2 varieties. They have naviza and they have grelos. And that's something that's very, very peculiar to this area of Spain. You wouldn't find that anywhere. And obviously turnips, so the whole trinity of those 3 products. So the turnip tops, grelos, navizas, and the nabo. I forgot the name for like the turnip would be considered the trinity of Galician cuisine. And people are very, very peculiar about them. And I haven't been able to find them here, but some Galician company has started making dehydrated version of them that you can buy online. And all their stews have that same, like, remember how we said in La Rioja, you have pochas with those pickled peppers. I think in Galicia, that element of acidity is introduced by these products. Because once again, if you have just, you know, white beans and fat and things like that, pork fat, you need something to cut through the fat. So the use of grelos would be what gives the pote gallego like a bitter and like nutty flavor that other regions, you know, maybe wouldn't have. So because if you look at cocido madrileño, it's all fat and ham and this, but there's no acidity. And I love that about Galicia cuisine, that they have that appreciation for what these bitter elements add to the food. Then we also have empanadas. And empanadas, you have to remember there's two types. There's the ones that are made with corn that are more delicate. They're made with corn and wheat, but those are the ones that would have all the, you know, seafood. And then, you know, like when I mean seafood, I mean like cockles and things like that. So they're more delicate. And then the bonito ones would be made, or the tuna bonito, they would be made with wheat and they would be sturdier. But I would definitely like, you should try the ones that are made with corn and wheat that are more, I don't know, just like delicate. And corn is a big crop in Galicia. And when they brought corn, they realized they could grow it, the corn that came from America. And you'll see when you're walking like Orreos, where they dry corn. It's like a little house with corn inside, and that's where they dry it. So corn is an important element, but, you know, obviously not as important as polenta. Like polenta has become very trendy in Italy. It wasn't for a while, but in Spain, we have a lot of corn porridges. So in Galicia, they have one that's, you can have sweet, for example, and you have it with milk and sugar. But then if you went to Andalusia, you would find a similar one that you eat with peppers or sardines or something like that. But in Galicia, normally this preparation, the corn is used for the empanadas, like for these mixed doughs, and it's used for the, you know, papas de maíz, which would be a sweet, almost like a dessert. Like, it's a weird thing. Not a lot of people find that, but if you have access to it, try it. It's like a sweet polenta. Other things about Galicia. Galicia is very well known for all their canneries, so fish and seafood. So to me, this is possibly the most interesting thing, and the seafood, obviously, but the seafood of Galicia is very famous all over Spain. But one thing, and I think people know that about Galicia because they go there and they see pulpo, like the octopus, and they see, you know, cockles. But what people don't realize is just what a powerful industry the canning industry is in Galicia, and how it drives a lot of the design. Like you see a lot of cans, or you see there's two museums that relate to fish canning. And these are, to Spaniards, gastronomic jewels, you know, you'd be like, and I like how you can, you know, bring them in your bag. Like, I don't know, when I go hiking, I always love to bring, especially the pickled mussels. They're like escabeche. So you just bring that and you open it and it's like a real treat. And all these seafood and all these fish, obviously, as you know, there's four denominations of origin in of wine in Galicia, and Rías Baixas especially. It's something that pairs very beautifully. So don't be, you know, if you go somewhere and they have a can of something, that to a Spaniard is a treat. It's not like, what? Where am I getting served can? But one dish to definitely try is the octopus. Octopus from Galicia is obviously eats in all the estuaries, La Rías Baixas and the Rías Altas, they eat such a good diet that they're so flavorful. And if you notice, like if you have octopus from somewhere else, you'll notice it's just not as flavorful. And pulpo is famous for being cooked by women. So you see pulpeiras that cook the octopus at town fair, like at fairs on the streets, and they have the wooden plates. So, but you know, in the same way that you have all these fresh, amazing seafood, and Galicia is always guarantee of good quality. So if you go to a restaurant anywhere in Spain and it's Gallego, you're guaranteed, you know, it's the highest quality. But don't miss out on the cans. And if you can, you know, just go to a little shop, buy a couple. Some of them will cost a lot of money. So some cans can cost 30 euro for, especially for clams. But that's, don't be, some people are like, is this a joke? But no, it's for real. Like, these cans do cost that. And they're, a lot of them are harvested by hand. It's wild. It's a wild product. Mussels obviously are not. But if you're looking at something like clams, these are hand, you know, the women, the marisqueiras will go and get the clams. They'll either be on a boat or by foot. So definitely Galicia to me is such an interesting gastronomic place. It's fascinating. And then of course the Tarta de Santiago that has so much history, and it has so much history because if you look at the cross, it's the cross of the Order of Santiago. And a lot of people don't realize this is like the most amazing form of cultural appropriation, because almonds were brought by the Muslims to Spain. They're not native to Galicia. This is very similar to, you know, Arab confectionery. And all of a sudden, Casa Mora in Santiago decided to plant a cross. But that cross has so much history because it's the cross of a defunct order of, you know, noblemen who fought in their reconquest of Spain when they were trying to claim back, you know, after 800 years of Muslim rule. They also protected people on the Camino because the Camino was not a safe place to go. So a lot of, you know, there's a lot of stories of people getting attacked or robbed or tricked. So that cross is so, so important to the history of Spain. And then also that cross, if you go to El Prado Museum, you will see a painter, Velázquez, has it on his chest because he was awarded that cross, even though he really wasn't a nobleman. And so once you look for that cross, you'll see it everywhere. The football club Celta de Vigo has it. So it's a kind of fun cross, and just keep an eye for that cross. But what it means really is the Order of Santiago, like very, very brave men, soldiers. So it just ended up in this cake by coincidence. Just somebody thought it was a good idea. I'm going to do it. I think obviously if the Order of Santiago was still alive today, they wouldn't be very happy with it. They'd be suing them. But anyway, I think that's it. Like, I'm sure I haven't covered everything, but that just gives you a taste of what to expect in the different areas of the Camino. And obviously there's more Caminos. I think the north would be an interesting one to do, also taking into account the canneries that are there. So anyway, we'll leave that for another time.
Fantastic. Wow, I learned so much, and I absolutely cannot wait for my next trip to the Camino, because I think I'm gonna have to take it at half speed so that I can have enough time to try every single one of the things that you've listed. Wow. Okay, thank you so, so much for joining us. Thank you so much for sharing all of that information. I'm going to get you to help us to write a bit of a blog with some of the spellings of those words and some information about them, because that is absolutely fascinating. We'll have that on our website very soon. Thank you again. And I'm sure we will have you back for some more videos in the future.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks, Blanca.
Okay.